I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour writes that everyone loves to talk about the weather this winter. Mother Nature has served up a feast to chew on, and few parts of the United States have been spared her wrath. While listening to news from NPR and the bad weather again in the East, I'm reminded of how often all the newscasts, even national television newscasts, have led with the terrible weather, particularly on the East Coast or the terrible cold in the Midwest. She goes on to write that severe drought and abnormally warm conditions continue in the West, with the first ever rain-free January in San Francisco. Bitter cold hangs tough over the upper Midwest and Northeast, and New England is being buried by a seemingly endless string of snow nor'easters. So you have to start asking the question, this persistent pattern, is it climate change at work here? And she's done some investigation of the polar jet stream and how it has changed in recent years. It's doing some odd things. Jennifer is with us this hour, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. Professor Jennifer Francis, thank you so much for being with us. You know, it isn't just my imagination, but I watch the news every night too. I'm one of those people who watches, you know, the half hour of national news. And it seems as though this year, probably 60% of the newscasts have led with all of these bizarre snowstorms or cold weather, particularly East Coast weather. It's dominating the news.
Well, I think that's true. A lot of people have been suffering very severely, and a lot of damage has been done. Towns are running out of money to plow snow and salt their roads. And yet the flip side, out west, they're dealing with some terrible drought conditions, and they've set some records for warm temperatures. So it's, you know, one side of the country is dealing with one kind of problem, and we here in the East and Midwest are dealing with the other side.
Mm-hmm. And at what point, you as a scientist, you say that eventually that we start to raise eyebrows concerning the weather. When did you start to raise your eyebrows?
Oh, my eyebrows have been raised for a while now, actually. But we were able to actually put a paper together with a hypothesis that we could support with some analysis a few years ago, along with my colleague Steve Vavris, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've been thinking about this for a while, but in particularly as it's connected to the rapidly warming Arctic and what influence that might have on the jet stream, which is this fast-moving river of air that encircles the northern hemisphere and really is responsible for most of the weather that we all experience in the United States. So this is the angle that we've been taking, although there are many other aspects of climate change that also can have an impact on the jet stream.
Well, let's spend a few moments talking about the rapidly warming Arctic, because you are absolutely astounded by how quickly this has happened. How warm has it become? How quickly did it happen?
Well, just in the last 30 years or so, we've seen the amount of sea ice that floats on the Arctic Ocean decline by about half in terms of its aerial coverage. And even more striking is its volume. So that would be the aerial coverage times its thickness. And that has decreased by about two-thirds. Back in 2012, we actually saw it dip down to only 25% of its normal amount. And so this change has been dramatic. It's been really fast. And, you know, I think we all expected it. We expected the sea ice to melt, but I think it took us by surprise by how fast it really disappeared.
It is just dramatic. What you said is so dramatic, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's not a small change. This
no.
is, you know, we don't have to use statistical significance tests to detect this change. It's just huge.
Yeah. All right, now let's talk about the jet streams. What are they?
So, yes, there's jet streams, you're right, it's plural. The one that we're talking about here is the polar jet stream, and it forms between the Arctic and what we call the mid-latitudes, which is sort of the middle part of the northern hemisphere where most people tend to live. And it exists because the middle latitudes are much warmer than it is up in the Arctic. So there's a big temperature difference as you go northward. And it's this temperature difference that really creates the fuel that drives the winds of the jet stream. And so this jet stream is high over our heads. It's called the jet stream is because it's up where the jets fly. And it blows basically from west to east, but it has these north-south waves in it all the time. And those waves are what create the weather systems that we experience down here on the surface. So the low-pressure systems that are storms and the high-pressure systems that are the clear blue skies. And so what happens with those waves in the jet stream or with anything, any changes to the jet stream, we're going to feel as weather changes down here on the surface.
Mm-hmm. And
I was just going to go on to say that because the Arctic is warming so fast, this temperature difference that I just described that fuels the jet stream has been getting smaller. This is something we can measure. And because that difference is getting smaller, there's less force to drive the winds of the jet stream. So we're seeing the west to east winds of the jet stream get weaker.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something we can measure as well.
Mm-hmm. And they're getting weaker. They're also getting wavier. Is that fair?
Right. So we know that when the jet stream winds get weaker, just, you know, whether it's a day-to-day thing or a natural thing, we know that when the jet stream tends to be weak, those north-south waves that I described tend to get larger. Mm. The jet stream tends to take bigger swings north and bigger swings south. And those waves, when they get big like that, tend to not move very fast from west to east. Normally, they would progress from west to east, and so we would feel changes in the weather. But when they get really large, they tend to move more slowly from west to east. And so if this all connects the way we think it does, then our hypothesis says that as the Arctic is warming so fast, we should see these waves get larger, which means that the weather that we experience becomes more persistent. It feels like it just doesn't change and it hangs around longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this winter has been a perfect example of that kind of a persistent weather pattern.
Oh, it sure has. And you and the East Coast have really felt it this winter, haven't you? It's just been relentless.
Yes, and we still are. We're expecting another 3 to 5 inches of snow tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, people are getting pretty tired of it, and, you know, they know I study this stuff, so they're, you know, I get a lot of complaints.
I'm sure you do, but you can't complain, right? It's your business to study it, so you have to say,
well, it's very interesting and exciting for me. You know, it's making life less comfortable for people and even serious for other people. So.
Right.
You know, it's not a laughing matter, but it is certainly, from a meteorological perspective, pretty interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just true in North America. You also make reference in the paper that I was reading to what's happening in Central Asia due to these jet stream waves that where there's a large patch of Arctic ice near Russia, right, that have been melting, and so it's having an impact in Central Asia, very cold there.
Right. So this phenomenon that I'm describing related to Arctic warming is affecting weather patterns all around the Northern Hemisphere. But specifically, the connection that you're talking about is that there has been a number of papers that have come out just in the last few months that have all been looking at the effects of the loss of sea ice sort of north of Scandinavia and north of far western Russia in this area. There's been a lot of ice lost in this particular area, and that seems to be causing unusually cold winters to occur in Central Asia. So this seems like a very robust connection that's been documented there.
You also say that this whole area is difficult as a scientist to study. So how do you go about studying climate change's effect on the jet stream?
Right, and the difficulty comes in because the atmosphere is such a noisy, chaotic, variable thing. You know, our weather is changing all the time anyway, and so to detect real changes over time that are potentially caused by climate change is not always an easy thing to do. So we've been working on a number of different approaches to try to figure out whether the jet stream really is behaving differently, and to try, if we do find those changes, which we actually have found some changes, whether we can connect those back to the Arctic warming or not. So there's kind of several different pieces to the puzzle that we're trying to connect.
And when did you start to notice these weather patterns? I think that I noticed it, and many of us noticed it here with that new term last year, polar vortex, and this incredible cold that just didn't leave, and then we were worried that it was going to happen again this year. I mean, people were really worried. We talked about it in July. Oh, I hope we don't get a winter like we had last year. is this, when did it start? That term started here last year. Did the whole thing in a scientist's studies start much earlier than that?
Yeah, so, right. So this winter and last winter have both been very cold in the east and warm in the west. But if you go back one more winter, the pattern was exactly opposite. Mm-hmm. So people forget, when it comes to weather, memory isn't all that reliable in from individual people. But back in 2012, which was three winters ago now, it was just the opposite. So we broke thousands of high temperature records. It was a very warm winter in the east, and it was cool in the west. But it, again, it goes back to what the jet stream was doing. Instead of it having a big northward swing over the west and a big southward dip over the east, as we've seen this year and last year, it was just the opposite. It was a southward dip over the west and a big northward swing over the east. But in both cases, the waves in the jet stream were very large. And so coming back to this point, when the waves get really large, the waves don't move very fast from west to east, so we tend to get stuck in these patterns for longer.
Mm-hmm. And what about other things that influence the jet stream? I always get these two mixed up, but the El Nino and La Nina, don't they influence the jet stream?
Oh, definitely, yes. They are very powerful influences on especially North American weather and also throughout the Pacific region. So this is a shift in surface temperature patterns out in the Pacific Ocean. El Nino is when we have warmer than normal temperatures off of the west coast of South America, and then La Nina is just the flip side. So when we're in an El Nino pattern, it tends to be fairly wet in California and across the southern tier of the United States, and La Nina tends to be kind of the opposite. But there's a whole bunch of other types of those patterns that naturally shift from one phase to another phase. El Nino tends to be a fairly short-lived pattern, and there are other ones that last longer. In particular, there's one that's quite relevant for this winter and last winter, and it's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. So, again, it's a pattern of sea surface temperatures out in the Pacific. And in late 2013, it flipped from what we call the negative phase, which means there's cooler than normal temperatures all along the western coast of North America. And it had been that way for about 10 years on and off, mostly on. And at the end of 2013, it actually flipped quite abruptly over to what is called the positive phase, which means it has very warm temperatures along the west coast. There's been some recent research just in the last couple of weeks that's come out showing that this flip in these surface temperature patterns out in the Pacific is one of the main factors that's caused this very persistent pattern that we've been experiencing with the warm temperatures in the west and the cold in the east, but also that the very warm Arctic is contributing to that as well by making those waves I was talking about in the jet stream even larger, which means that makes the pattern even more persistent.
Jennifer Francis, research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences, is our guest this hour, and we're looking at weather patterns becoming persistent, what they're living through now, this endless snow on the East Coast, and we've been living with a cold, though not as cold as what was happening last year, but severe drought and very warm conditions in the West, the first ever rain-free January in the city of San Francisco. So all these snowstorms, the droughts, the cold, we've lived through all of them before, but she and other scientists raising the question, the persistence of this pattern is starting to concern scientists in asking, is climate change at work here, and how might it be at work? And what's happened to the jet streams as a result of the rapidly warming Arctic. Those were really alarming statistics she gave a little while ago, weren't they? What's happened in the last 30 years. So here's how you reach our conversation. And we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's welcome phone calls. Jennifer Francis, our guest, research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. And we start our calls with Kenneth in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. What are the human activities that are contributing, I mean, from the last 40 or 50 years to all of this? And why is the high rate of carbon dioxide so much a factor? I mean, how is it a factor?
Okay, good questions. Well, first of all, as we burn so many fossil fuels, just really the big uptick since World War II, as we industrialized and started driving more cars and people had central heat, we started putting a lot more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide being the primary one of those. And the reason that is affecting the climate system is because carbon dioxide is what we call a heat-trapping gas. So the greenhouse gases are transparent to incoming sunlight, but the Earth also emits energy in a longer wave form of energy, which we call infrared. And these greenhouse gases are very good at absorbing that infrared energy. So it acts like a blanket around the Earth that is up in the atmosphere. So there's carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere naturally, but we're adding to them. And that's just like putting a thicker blanket on your bed. It keeps more and more of the heat trapped down near the surface. And so as we're doing this and as the Earth is warming in response to this extra carbon dioxide, of course, we're seeing the global temperatures increase, but they're increasing faster up in the Arctic for a couple different reasons. One of them is because of the sea ice and snow that's up there. So as we melt some ice, say, that's floating on the ocean, then as that ice disappears, underneath it is open water. Of course, the ice is very good at reflecting the sun's energy, but the open water is not. All of that extra energy where the ice used to be then goes into the ocean and warms the ocean instead of getting reflected right back to outer space. So we get extra heat going into the Arctic climate system. It warms the ocean, it melts more ice, which you can see how this turns into like an amplifying factor. And this is one of the main reasons why it's warming so fast up in the Arctic.
Mm. So why is it maybe warming as fast in the Antarctic?
Ah, that's a good question, too. So the Antarctic is a continent, while the Arctic is an ocean. And Antarctica is covered by a very, very thick layer of ice on top of the land. So it's actually much colder in the Antarctic as well. The Arctic is quite near the freezing point of water for much of the time. And, of course, where the ice meets the water, it is at the freezing point. So it doesn't take much warming to melt the ice in the Arctic, as opposed to the Antarctic, where it's so cold that 1 or 2 degrees of warming doesn't have much of an impact there. The other reason the Antarctic isn't warming very fast is the sea ice that forms on the ocean around Antarctica melts back to the coast every summer anyway. And so you don't have this opportunity to melt extra ice, which absorbs extra energy from the sun. So you just don't have as much of this effect of the disappearing ice increasing the amount of energy absorbed into the ocean there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Kenneth, for your call. Scott is next in Madison. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeful that your guests can either debunk or confirm my understanding of what's happening with respect to the polar vortexes, or as I called them last year, the bipolar vortexes. And that is that with the warming of the Arctic, the pressure gradient that ordinarily occurs due to the relatively cold temperatures of the Arctic and the warm high pressure temperatures and atmospheric conditions south at Point South keeps the Arctic jet stream confined to a tight circle around the Arctic. But because of the warming, that gradient has abated. And so now those polar jet stream flows are more or less free to roam further south. Is that a fair understanding of what's going on?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, it's still colder in the Arctic than it is in the areas farther south. So, you know, that temperature difference is still there, and it's still strong. But as the Arctic warms faster, it's just getting weaker. So it's not like the jet stream doesn't have anything confining it anymore. You know, we still have a jet stream there because of this temperature difference. So, but our hypothesis is that as that temperature difference does get smaller, that we expect to see it take this wavier path as it travels around the northern hemisphere.
It's like taking a belt off, you know, or, you know, you have this low pressure center that draws all of the, you know, the stream inside. And then, you know, if that low pressure versus high pressure difference is lessened, then it just expands, I think. But I think you've confirmed what I thought was going on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the jet streams changing possibly because of the rapid Arctic warming, which is making them wavier, and they get stuck in certain places rather than, as they normally do, go fairly rapidly from west to east. Now they're getting stuck, and it's creating some weather patterns that we've been seeing that we haven't seen much of before, with incredible amounts of snow on the East Coast, droughts on the West Coast, and these are persistent patterns that it's really hard to get out of them. Eventually, you know, if the weather stays this bad for too many more years, it's just going to create horrible problems for people living through this. I can't imagine people are going to, forgive me for saying this, want to stay in Boston if it snows like that every year.
Well, it's probably a good time to buy a property in Florida.
Right.
Before all the New Englanders head down there. But you know, New Englanders are tough. We expect to have a decent winter around here. I live in Massachusetts now, actually. And, you know, I think people live up here, at least some of us, because we love having four seasons, and I'm sure that's true in Wisconsin as well. But, you know, it's been pushing people over the edge this year, that's for sure. And
right.
If we had too many more winters like this, you know, I think we might see more people deciding they don't want to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, you do have to ask the question. It's the first time that I asked it last year when it was that cold. What the heck am I doing here? I mean, we can't go outside. It's just too cold.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, you've got the flip side in the other part of the country where
yes.
They're complaining about not having any snow to ski on, no snow to fill their reservoirs through the summer. It's actually a much more desperate situation out there in some ways because, you know, we're all going to feel the effects of, of agriculture having a big water deficit in California. You know, it's pretty serious out there, too.
Right.
But for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, same reason, but different. A different impact.
Yes. Richard in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Professor, here's my question. It's got two parts. The first part is what happens if nothing changes in our civilization in the next 50 years? The second question I had, my brother's an environmental scientist who worked for the EPA, and he said it's the number one issue of our age and that it's fixable. he thinks it's unlikely. So those two questions.
Okay, right. So if nothing changes, I'm assuming you mean in our behavior in terms of burning fossil fuels and putting additional carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. If we stay on the track that we're on, things are going to get pretty interesting, I'd say. Certainly nothing good. Right now, every year, we've put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than the year before. So we're on this escalating curve. It's not just a linear, you know, straight line increase. It's actually accelerating every year. So we're on this very bad track. But your relative there, who's the environmental scientist, is correct in that when you put one molecule of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that molecule tends to stay there for about 100 years on average. So even if we could stop producing any greenhouse gases at all today, we'd still have a lot of change coming our way in the climate system because of all the greenhouse gases we've already put there. So there, you know, we're going to have to deal with a lot more climate change, and it's going to be difficult, frankly. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do everything we can possibly do to try to slow this down. Anything we can do to conserve electricity, conserve energy, conserve the amount of gas we put in our cars, whatever it is, and to switch over to other forms of energy so that we're not burning so many fossil fuels is all going to help. So every little bit we can do, there's no silver bullet. We can't come up with one single pill to take to cure this disease. It's something that we're all going to have to contribute to in various ways. And, you know, slowing it down is probably the only hope we have. There's no way we can turn it around.
And if we do continue to release as many CO2s as we do now, and we see more of an Arctic melt, which is going to happen at least for the next few years unless we radically change our behavior, what are the impacts on the jet stream? Does it move? Do these wavy patterns go even farther south at some point, or do they stay where they are? Do they stay locked in place for a longer period of time?
Well, that's a great question. So right now, the effects on the jet stream because of Arctic warming are largest in the fall and the winter. And that's because those are the seasons when the Arctic warming is happening the fastest. And it's largely related to the loss of sea ice and the snow on high-latitude land areas. So what I'd expect to see as we continue to lose even more ice and snow is that the effects on the jet stream will expand to the other seasons more noticeably. And, you know, probably at some point we'll lose all of the sea ice during the summertime, and that might make the effects in the fall level out a little bit, but, you know, we'll still continue to warm the Arctic Ocean even when there's no sea ice there. So, you know, we're going to get longer periods of time with no sea ice in the Arctic Ocean. And I, as I said, I think the effects will start to be more noticeable in the other seasons, in the spring and the summer as well.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call, Richard. Let's go next to Al in Appleton. Hi, Al.
Hi. Yes. I was just wondering, I just tuned into the program shortly, not too long ago, and maybe this question was already answered, but when you get into discussions about climate change with people who don't believe in climate change, their big argument most often is, well, yeah, we may be warming, but it's just a natural cycle of things. We've had warming spells in the past, we've had ice ages in the past, and this is just a natural pattern. I personally believe it's human caused, but how do scientists, or how would a layman explain that, yes, it is human caused, and how do we know for a fact on what type of science gathering is backs up the fact of it is human-caused climate change, as opposed to just a normal, you know, several millennium change naturally. I was just wondering. I've always been of the feeling that, you know, that we can't dig up 600 or 700 million years of carbon laid down and dig it up over the course of 100 years and burn it all and not have some kind of some kind of change or something that's going to happen. So anyhow, I was just curious.
Right. Well, first of all, the people who say that are correct, that looking back in the past, we have had ice ages when it's been colder than it is now, and we've also had what are called interglacial periods, which are when it's warmer than it is now. But we also know what caused those swings between warm and cold, and they're due to changes in the Earth's orbit, because the Earth's orbit doesn't stay the same. It's an ellipse, actually, not a circle, and so that ellipse gets more elongated and more circular over a regular cycle. And we also know that they're partly due to changes in the tilt of the Earth. So right now, the Earth's tilt is about 23.5 degrees relative to the Sun on our orbit, but that doesn't stay the same either. It wobbles back and forth. And those various changes to the Earth's orbit and the Earth's tilt cause the Sun's energy to be distributed differently around the Earth, and they cause these warming and cooling periods. So we understand all that, and we can see evidence of those changes over time. So interestingly, we had an ice age about 14,000 years ago, and we had a very warm period, an interglacial after that, around 8,000 years ago, and ever since we've been cooling. So if it weren't for the extra greenhouse gases we were putting in the atmosphere right now, we'd actually be on a natural overall cooling cycle. Oh. And we can actually see that looking back through time, say the last 1,000 years ago, as we look at various records that give us indications of what the Earth's temperature has been over time, things like tree rings and sediment cores and ice cores and things like that. But what's very different about what's happening, say, in the last century is the pace of change. So not only did we stop this cooling trend, but the warming trend is so abrupt and so rapid that it hasn't been able, there's really no analog that we can find going back in time that's like what we're experiencing right now. And the other thing is we have understood this physics of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, water vapor, there's a whole bunch of them, methane. We understand how they work, and we've understood that for a good 100 years at least. And so the fact that we're increasing these various greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, we'd expect to see the Earth warm, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And we'd expect to see the Arctic warm faster. It all fits. And on top of that, we have these wonderful tools that we call global climate models, which are very sophisticated computer programs that simulate all of the physical processes that happen in the climate system, maybe not all of them, but most of them. And they do quite a good job of simulating how the climate has behaved in the past, and so we can also use them to look into the future. So with these very sophisticated models, what we can do is tell the model about, okay, what's happening with the sun's output, what's been happening with volcanic eruptions, all of the natural changes that have happened that would change the temperature of the Earth. And we can run those models out into the future or just within the last couple decades, and they will simulate this very gradual cooling that I was just talking about. But if you don't tell them about the fact that the greenhouse gases have been increasing, they won't be able to simulate this warming that's been happening in the real world. And so when we do put in the observed changes to the greenhouse gases that are resulting from burning fossil fuels and using fertilizers and all sorts of other things, then they do quite a good job of simulating how the Earth's temperature has risen in the last 100 years or so. So we have a lot of evidence that substantiates what we basically already knew.
Very thorough answer. Thank you, Al, very much for the call. And let's go to Marty in Milwaukee next. Hi, Marty.
Hi. Great topic today. I really appreciate this. I know that a few years ago, this was the phenomenon was called global warming, and now I hear it's normally called global climate change. And that got me to thinking, because global warming, I thought maybe Milwaukee eventually will become a nice resort spot, you know, as it gets it gets warmer all year round. But I'm wondering if it's possible that certain parts of the globe will actually get colder as a result of changing, airstreams or jet mm-hmm. streams, I mean, and other kind of micro effects of an overall warming trend. Is there any information on how that might affect a specific area?
Yeah, that's a good question. And first of all, I want to say that this some people say that we used to call this global warming, and now we don't call it global warming, and now we call it climate change. They're two different things. Global warming refers to the average overall temperature increase of the Earth, and that is happening. Climate change, or I'd say climate change, not global climate change, although you could go either way, but climate change refers to all the other aspects of things that are happening in the climate system because of either the warming that's happening or, for example, you've heard of ocean acidification probably. And this is also a result of the increase in greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide in particular, causing the oceans to become more acidic. So it is an aspect of global climate change, but it's not global warming. So those two terms are both accurate, but they mean different things. So whether anywhere is going to get cooler over time, really the answer is probably no. Some places will warm more than others, for sure, and that's exactly what we've been seeing. But overall, the globe is going to warm. We're going to see fewer and fewer cold temperature records being broken and more high temperature records being broken. And this is already being observed. You know, places like Milwaukee will start to feel warmer in general. And in fact, there are even some online tools that can help you go to your own city and see what it's going to be like at the end of the century, for example.
Oh, really?
It'll put Milwaukee in another location that has a similar climate to what's expected for Milwaukee, say, in 2100.
How do you get to that? What are those?
Oh, I'd have to dig around to find it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but
You can Google it, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can definitely Google it. But everywhere basically is going to warm up. The only place that's getting colder is not actually on the surface of the Earth. It's way up high in the stratosphere. The very high levels of the atmosphere will actually cool off. And that is also a result of increasing greenhouse gases, believe it or not.
Thank you so much for the call, and we'll take more in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. Professor Jennifer Francis, research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences, is our guest. And we are looking at weather. We're looking at record-breaking snow amounts on the East Coast, droughts in the West Coast, lack of rain, January, no rain at all in San Francisco, unheard of, record amounts of snow in cities like Boston. So these patterns, this polar vortex that we experienced last year, these jet streams seem to be changing. And instead of going pretty directly and pretty quickly west to east because of the ice melting in the Arctic, it's a wavier jet pattern. And so it's bringing down much colder air and stalling weather patterns as well, so it's really hard to get out of a cold spell, as we know now, or a snowy spell, and it's not just happening on this continent. So we're looking at all of that and the relationship between climate change and these very, very unusual, persistent weather patterns. 800-486-8655. Leave messages on our Facebook page, too. We love to read them. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. We have many of them, and our next caller is Michael in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thank you, and thank you for having this conversation. Professor, I'm curious. Since 72.3% of the planet are oceans, I'm wondering why we aren't looking more at the oceans as the influence against or through our climate. And what is really interesting is the feature that we are removing 90 million tons of biomass every year in our fishing behaviors, and those fish are not coming back, which are great filters of our water for toxic metals and so on, and also controlling the flows of the currents and so on. So I'm wondering, are we overlooking the oceans as the major contributor to causing the planet to warm up?
No, I think a lot of people are studying the ocean side of this whole problem. We know the oceans are warming up dramatically. We know they're becoming more acidic. We know that sea levels are rising. That's another very conspicuous aspect of climate change. So I think, you know, people are very attuned to what's happening in the oceans. And as you say, a lot of the changes in the ocean are affecting the ecosystem as well. There's the fisheries on both of our coasts of the United States are shifting in dramatic ways. Part of that is due to overfishing. Part of it's due to pollution and you know, runoff from people's lawns and septic systems and so forth that are changing the, you know, the real base of the food web in terms of plankton and so forth. So it's a complicated story, though, once you start getting into the ecosystem side of effects of climate change, particularly in the oceans, because in a lot of places there aren't good baselines of, you know, what normal is and what are the prey and predator relationships in a particular ecosystem in a particular area. So, you know, some of those questions are difficult to answer, but some of the changes that are already being observed are absolutely huge.
Tim leaves this message on Facebook. Is it fair for me to assume that the weather patterns and climate of my childhood will be unrecognizable to my children?
I think that's very possible. Mm. We're definitely warming the planet. This is not a question. It's absolutely confirmed. We're going to see the climates of places where you lived warm up dramatically over the next, you know, several decades. We've already seen that happening. The types of weather patterns that have occurred in the past will probably look quite different in the future. We're already seeing shifts in precipitation character, for example. We know that the frequency of heavy downpours, whether it's frozen or liquid, so whether it's rain or snow, are already increasing, you know, in a pretty dramatic way. In the Northeast here, for example, we're seeing about a 70% increase in the frequency of heavy precipitation events compared to the 20th century. So there's a whole variety of changes in weather patterns that are happening simultaneously. Even things like tropical storms, which is really not my specialty, but as we warm the oceans, we not only allow those tropical systems to maintain their tropical characteristics farther north, but we're making those the season for tropical systems longer because of those warming oceans. So there's a lot of different aspects to climate change that are affecting weather patterns, in addition to what I've been talking about relative to the Arctic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. Jeff in Mount Horeb, hi.
Hi. I wonder if your guest could dispel or confirm something I read some time ago, and that was that an eruption like Mount St. Helens gave off in that one eruption more greenhouse gases than all of Industrial Revolution all the way up to now that all humans have produced. I'm wondering if she could speak to that. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call.
That's completely wrong. Simple as that. Nowhere near.
And let's go to Jim in Rice Lake. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for your show, Kathy. I'm showing your guest. I run into climate change or climate warming deniers all the time, and they cite things like a 1970 Newsweek article of climatologists predicting the coming ice age, to which I always respond like, well, look at the Glacier National Park. There's no glaciers anymore. But my other question is that I'm one of those people that read newspapers, and I remember an article a few years back, which they showed a chart showing the places most affected by climate change, and it indicated the upper Midwest of the United States would be the most predicted change in our country, at least continentally. And I wanted to know if that information I read was accurate. I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let's see. Starting with the 1970s prediction of an ice age. Well, you remember I said a little while ago that if it weren't for all these greenhouse gases that we're putting in the atmosphere, we were in a cooling cycle in terms of natural changes in the climate system. But because of all of this additional carbon dioxide and methane and so forth, we have completely changed the direction of that trajectory. So we're warming much faster now. And my understanding is that back in the 70s there, it was a relatively small number of scientists that were saying that we were going to be in a cooling situation. So I don't think that was a mainstream sentiment in terms of what scientists actually thought. And let's see, the upper Midwest being one of the most sensitive areas to climate change, mm-hmm. I don't think that that really holds much water. Generally, northern areas will probably be more sensitive than areas farther south. So it could be that they were focusing on, the upper Midwest in particular, but I think the whole northern tier, and especially getting up into northern Canada, you're much more susceptible to changes in temperature in particular.
Richard Rhinelander leaves this email. I'm not asking for a doomsday scenario, but my question sort of leads in that direction. What's the worst case scenario?
Well, the worst case scenario, I think, we're going to be dealing with increasing levels of sea level rise or increasing pace of sea level rise. This is going to affect a lot of people around the world. In my mind, this is probably the most immediate problem that we should be facing, and people already having to deal with it in places like Norfolk, Virginia, for example. Every high tide, pretty much, they have water in their streets. Miami is another very vulnerable location. All of the low-lying areas, and people have flocked to the coast to live. So the population is there's a lot of people living within, say, a few feet of the sea level. So, we're looking at a lot of property being damaged, and that's just due to the sea level rise all by itself. But then when you get a storm on top of that, Sandy was a perfect wake-up call where we had this, unusual late-season storm come into a region that's not used to dealing with tropical storms, and that extra foot of sea level that has happened just in the last century or so, and even more recently, just made it all that much worse. So, I think that's going to be the most immediate problem that we have to deal with. But, we're talking about a lot of very expensive and damaging problems that are going to be happening that are related to things like drought and heat waves. We know those have a big impact on people. But probably over time, cold will be less of a problem. So maybe that's the good news.
And in about 30 seconds, we'll take Margot, I'm sorry, from Prairie du Chien. Just quickly, please, Margot.
Okay. I was probably 9 years old. Our Scholastic magazine in sixth grade, scientists were warning us then about ecology. What has happened? Is it apathy with our society?
Is it apathy that's keeping us from doing anything? Jennifer.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say. Some places have done a lot, actually. Some areas have really cleaned up their pollution situation, which is, what I think you're talking about. The ecology back then was really suffering more from pollution than other things. And so, I think a lot of places have made a lot of progress. Look how much cleaner the Great Lakes are, for example, and most of our rivers. So I don't think... there is still some apathy and some areas that still need a lot of work, but I think we've also made a lot of progress on that front.
Professor Jennifer Francis, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for your interest and your calls with your questions. Tomorrow, join us and great conversations are ahead on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.